Welcome to Let's Talk Learning Disabilities with Lori Peterson and Abby Weinstein. Lori and Abby spend their days talking about dyslexia, dysgraphia, dyscalculia, and ADHD. They talk to parents of struggling students and adults who have had a lifetime of academic challenges. They want to share those stories along with their own insights with you. So, let's talk learning disabilities.
This is Lori.
And this is Abby.
Welcome to episode number 99. Holy cow. We're almost there. We're so excited.
I can't believe
we've gotten this far. Welcome to Let's Talk Learning Disabilities.
That's
great. We're so excited. Once again today, we have a phenomenal guest. You know, dyscalculia is something that we get a ton of calls about.
Yes.
And I feel like math has really been a focus lately. It's interesting because I think it's just because people are hearing about that particular term and they've
People have always struggled with math, but, you know, there's different buzzwords and big words that circle around that are in the media or on social media that people hear about. You know, forever it was dyslexia, and then it was the buzz was ADHD, and everyone wanted to have ADHD or thought they had it. So lately, over the last, like, year and a half, dyscalculia, which is a specific learning disability in math, has become real common. And so people are often calling us looking for testing to determine if they have dyscalculia.
And I think they just like to put a name with it.
They want to put a name with their struggles, right?
So today we have Cindy Palmer with us. She's from STEM Tutoring, where they do all things dyscalculia. Welcome, Cindy.
Thank you so much. Good to be here.
Thanks for being here today. We're so excited to talk to you and learn more about what you do. Do you mind just kind of giving us a little bit of your background and kind of what led you into the tutoring world?
Yeah, for sure. So I often talk about my life like it's a seesaw that I keep running back and forth on to try and figure out what my best middle point is. And the two ends are actually a full-on teacher with a classroom of 35 kids in the high school setting. And the other side is a one-to-one therapist for adolescents. Mm-hmm. So those are the two spots where I've done my dances in my training. So started in the classroom as a biology teacher. And then began to realize that I loved it when kids would come and talk to me individually. And so much so that I was like, well, why don't I just do that, 100% that? And went and got my master's in counseling and began my work with adolescents and quickly realized that in that context, in the teaching context, there was a lot of kids, too many kids. And I felt some of the ineffectiveness that teachers can feel due to the large population. They had to, you know, guess at what all the needs are before you, meet them as best as possible in 50 minutes time, mm-hmm. right? So I felt the struggle there. And in the therapeutic setting, I began to feel that 1 hour a week with the immensity of needs that this sweet human has, in addition to some pretty anxious parents who had a lot of high expectations of what could happen in that hour, was not a world that I enjoyed either. So, landed in the middle of those, which is the tutoring context, at least in the way that I do it, where all the skill sets gathered and all of the back pocket wisdom, I call it, for how mental health affects the academic aspect of a child's life. That feels like a very creative edge and one that I love to walk along. So mm-hmm. that's where and how I got to where I am, is kind of running away from both those ends and finding that this was the perfect fit. So
I think that, yeah, I love that you have that counseling background, because there's a lot of tutors that are master math, you know, tutors or master science tutors or master reading tutors. But having that counseling background and being able to look at a child or a student, adolescent, whatever the age, through that counseling mental health lens and the social emotional pieces, I think gives you some deeper understanding of their needs. And then not only can you tutor them in math or science, you can also help them build confidence and self-esteem and make sure that they're socially, emotionally stable and it's that it's evolved to where it needs to be to apply all the different skills and strategies that you're teaching them.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. It comes in handy all the time. Okay. And, you know, I think the lowercase t trauma that can come from constant failure and constant assessment from teachers and parents, for that matter, who believe that that child won't do something, not that they can't. Mm-hmm. And so there's a really big difference between those two caveats of a child who won't do their math homework versus a child who cannot and faces that daily, mm-hmm. multiple times a day, that they are asked to do something that their brain needs further support around and they don't have it. So that's really hard. Mm-hmm. And has a lot of shame attached to it. And so all those words, shame, trauma, all of that comes into the learning context. And, you know, our motto for what we did, I had a wise business consultant once tell me when I was very first starting this thing that I had to have three words. And everybody that worked for me and everybody we served through that work had to know what those were, either through experience or because I tell them, but hopefully through experience. And ours are connect, learn, grow. In that order for this reason. And so connection and it's become really buzzy in the tutoring world, which is kind of a bummer because I think it's lost its power. But that foundation of a therapeutic connection, not doing therapy, you can be therapeutic without doing therapy, and is really, really pivotal in light of students with neurodivergence and especially students with this. And, you know, I'm about to say dyscalculia different than you do, which I just did. And tomato, it's tomato, tomato, tomato. Yep, tomato just to, tomato. So people out there know. I've heard professionals in the field say dyscalculia, dyscalcula, and you guys are saying it even like slightly nuancedly different. And I think they're all correct. Mm-hmm. So anyway, but yeah, especially in light of dyscalculia, there's a lot of fear and fight or flight that happens when a student approaches a math problem. Mm-hmm. And navigating that first before you even think you're going to enter into the content itself is really pivotal.
Well, and I think sometimes what we find, and I have this conversation a lot with students, is that sometimes it's that inner dialogue that's keeping you from reaching that success. You may have all of the skills, but if you think you're bad at something, mm-hmm. and that's the conversation you're having in your head, that's a huge hurdle to get over. Mm-hmm. So I think working on that confidence and helping that student understand you're actually pretty good at this. Yeah, there are some things we need to tweak and we need to strengthen, but the root here is really strong. And it's more the inner dialogue and that self-talk that you have when you walk into math class mm-hmm. every day. It's very hard. Mm-hmm. That's a hurdle that's, you can have all the skills in the world, but if you don't believe that you're capable, you won't be. And I think having that counseling piece to it is huge because I think math is the subject that creates the most anxiety.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Right. I actually met with a client just this morning, an adult that suspected for a long time that he had dyscalculia. He sure enough, after, you know, a thorough comprehensive assessment, he did in fact have dyscalculia. And he asked me, is there hope for me? You know, will I be able to get better? Or is this like just this lifelong sentence of you're never going to be able to do math? And so you can probably answer this better. I did tell him it is a lifelong condition. However, you can learn a lot of the foundational principles and concepts that will help you know how to attack problems, a lot of strategies and skills, so you can get better, right?
They can. Absolutely. Yeah, I think this is not a death sentence to ever understanding or being able to do math. That's for sure. Otherwise, I wouldn't have a job. We just mm-hmm. call it done and then like avoid math for the rest of your life, right? So I think the trick is there's two levels of the struggle, and one is what you've already alluded to, and that's like the softer skill side of right now when that student gets stuck or they experience failure, that's all they know. It's the norm and they hate it. Mm-hmm. And literally fight or flight will kick in. all the stress things are flying around in their brain, which minimizes the brain's ability to learn in the first place.
Exactly.
Right. And certainly to remember anything, because all the brain's trying to do is to survive this terrible attack of math. Right. And so that's how it's interpreting this experience. So we have to get that calm down. So for us, that's through things like, you know, we spend the first, I'm not even going to put an exact number on this, but if a tutor spends 15 minutes of the hour talking about lizards, because that's what that kid likes, or you're going to talk about lizards. Mm-hmm. Oh, heck yeah, we're going to talk about lizards. Because we are being very intentional in those moments. That is a very, very pointed purpose. And that is to bring the anxiety level down and the brain activity down, bring the students' enjoyment up, so that their brain can be better online to even begin to do the hard thing. So, and the person cares for me, they're funny, I like them, all those things, right? And then we're probably going to make math problems about lizards, mm-hmm. or whatever else they like, you know? We've got to feed your lizard. It's going to starve unless you get the correct amount of food and you only have $10, you know? So those kind of things. So that's one piece. The other is equally, in some ways more important, is that you have to go back so far into the foundational building of their math skills to where they feel the moment where they actually remember or understand that thing. Mm-hmm. And that might be all the way back to 2 + 2. It might be. We might be talking to a 8th grader, and that might be how far we go back. And then you build upon what is known, and you do visual things. You do motion. You move blocks. You play with Cuisenaire rods. You watch videos of things. You manipulate things. You draw things. You do all kinds of things to engage very different aspects of the brain to get numbers in there. Mm-hmm. My favorite is, like, this is a really good example, because the first time dyscalculia really shows up is in multiplication, like times tables, and like you have 10 minutes to do mm-hmm. these, you know, 74 problems, and if you don't, you gotta try again, back to the drawing board. And so kids will never ever, now here's a never ever, if you have dyscalculia and you will not likely be able to memorize your times tables. So parents, like, oh my goodness, quit making them. Like, it's right. In the normal
kill
way.
Kill.
You can't, you're just pounding and pounding something that's not going to hold. And there's so many biological reasons for that. It has nothing to do with their stubbornness, their dedication.
Their intellect.
You know, it just doesn't. Yeah. So, things like, and I, first time I saw it, I thought this was crazy and weird and really what the heck, but it's stories. And it would have something like, Mrs. Week sat on the chair and fished. She caught 2 boots and 8 fish. Well, Mrs. Weeks is shaped in the number 7. It's in a little storybook. She sits on a chair that looks like the number 4. Mm. And then she catches 2 boots and 8 fish. It's 28. Now, someone with dyscalculia, they can remember a story. Oh, yeah, they can. They can remember the names. They can remember all the details. They can visualize the shapes. And so all of that, like, nuance will help them creatively memorize their times tables. But just 7 times 4, come on.
Right.
7 times 4, we did this yesterday. No, that is going to do nothing but harm.
I love that story idea.
Yeah, so that's one creative, just like really practical way.
It sounds and it's very so multi-sensory cute. What you do.
Yes.
Which yeah. we know, and I think we've shared with listeners before, that is really one of the very best ways to learn skills, to get them to stick and really get in your memory and stay there, especially for... Yeah. individuals that have learning challenges and learn differently, using multiple right. senses helps.
Yeah.
I'm still memorizing that story now.
I know. I am too. I love that.
What did you say?
Memorizing that story. That was so good.
Yeah.
I mean, you already have it memorized, don't you? Mrs. Week sat in a chair. She bought she caught two boots and 8 fish. Boom. You know, 7 times 4 is 28 into eternity.
Yeah. That's great. So Cindy, what ages do you work with? Because like I said, I met with an adult this morning that really needs help, but we see a lot of students of all ages from elementary up to college and adulthood.
Right. Yeah. So we started in the high school setting because that was my world. So I'm the one who started tutoring, and then they started asking me to do things. Quite frankly, I was a chemistry tutor, chemistry and biology, and then they started asking me to tutor physics and math classes, which is kind of ironic because I don't want to do either of those. Like, I'm not qualified to, honestly, which might be a little ironic that I own a company that is the bulk of the work we do. Mm-hmm. But people come to us as experts in math. That's not a problem. Like, we can find tutors that are experts in math, no problem. Now, tutors that can dig down into the experience of a learning difference and that whole soft skill therapeutic stance, that's what they need to learn. And that's a tough find if you think about it. I mean, if you play the stereotype of a math nerd who super loves it, super good, maybe they're an engineer. Let's just do all the stereotypes. Their ability to sit with a sixth grade girl who's shaking in her shoes for math, that's a rare find. Mm-hmm. So I'm more concerned that they have empathy and can connect. And then my second layer is skill set, but because that's easier to teach. Mm-hmm. Right. But we work with students ages, third grade is where we've dipped down into out of high school. So we've gradually kind of gotten younger and younger in our focus, knowing that you got to get this stuff earlier, right? Mm-hmm. And then all the way through college.
Awesome. Okay. Good to know.
So in addition to tutoring, you also do some college coaching, correct?
Yeah. Yes.
So I'd like to just spend a few minutes because I'm very fascinated by this and I love what you do for college students. First, if you can tell us kind of how this was born and sort of what you're doing now.
Yeah, for sure. So everything I've done has come very organically, meaning I never intended to be a business owner. I definitely didn't know it was going to be a tutoring business. And that was all kind of accidental. Too many people were asking me to tutor other things. And I thought, well, I should just hire someone, I guess, like put an ad on a Facebook page from my counseling program of all things and found someone. And he was with me for 4 years. So same kind of organic nature happened with this, and that is started realizing more and more that college students with ADHD are very underserved. Mm-hmm. And, so many factors go into that being an issue. But our students that we work with in the tutoring context would then, of course, grow up and go to college and face new struggles. Additionally, my own child is in her first year of college and kind of all. So I'm sort of swimming in this circle of people heading off to college and what it's really like. So really started understanding more through going to the International ADHD Conference a couple years ago in Dallas that this was a whole. At that point, there was only two presentations and not even the whole presentation was addressed to meeting the needs of college students. And so in my mind, honestly, it's maybe the worst phase of life for an ADHD human.
I would agree.
there's never more sparkly things around that draw them in. There's never less structure.
Right.
There's never less accountability. And the content's never harder. And I love contextualizing it this way. If they have four classes, this is similar to high school, they have four different bosses with four different sets of expectations, with four sets of due dates, four operating manuals, if you will, the syllabi. That is a lot to juggle.
It is. And they don't have their parents.
Adults have one job.
And they don't have their parents there to remind them and to help them.
Or they do have their parents who are texting them 27 times in a weekend. That's a real number.
Causing anxiety.
Bringing their own anxiety into the picture because they really don't have control over their kid now.
Right.
So that's where I have begun stepping in and loving the work. We're in year three of that, and currently serving in person. We're at Western Washington University in Bellingham, Washington. And we are about to expand to and all the smaller community colleges in our town as well. But we're about to expand, which is super fun. Yay. So we'll be heading to Montana State next.
Oh, wow.
And Bozeman. And cool. Who knows where we'll go from there. But that's...
Is that something you think eventually maybe could be done virtually?
Yeah, we do it virtually.
Oh, you do? Yep. Okay, good.
But so do a whole lot of other people. And I think what we're bringing to the table is that we are in person with these students on or near campus.
Near campus, yeah.
And that really is a game changer. And we have coaches that know the campus, coaches that know all the support, the student support services, and the people that run them.
Mm.
So there's an inside scoop to that that's very different than all the time and effort an online coach may have to spend to even figure out how the Disability Access Center works on campus, right?
Because it is so different at every college and university. So that is really cool. I think it probably makes a huge impact by knowing a lot of the ins of that particular campus. So the college coaching, but also you do study skills work. Is that correct?
Yeah. So that's a part of both worlds. I would say if we were doing a Venn diagram, like that fits both worlds very nicely, right?
Okay.
So, because
that's a huge area of need that we see weekly, study skills.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. So it's funny, about 8 years ago, I had a tutor apply with me, and he only wanted to apply because he was at the University of Washington and was doing research on study skills for underserved populations, right? Mm-hmm. So either first-gen students, female students in the STEM field, and what they needed to succeed in those classes. So he wanted to work for me as a research project, which I said, no, you cannot do that. But he did come and share the fledgling stages of research-based sort of study skills. And they've been around, but now they're getting a bit more attention, right? So there's books that have come out. One is, I'm not going to remember it. That might come back to me here in a second. But basically, Make It Stick. Right. And there's been various peel offs after that. Make It Stick is the name of one of the first books that was really honing in on, how do you get this information to stick in your brain? Right. And so, so we began to really dabble in the exploration of some research-based study skills and helping our students be able to use those. That has landed in the tutoring world as well. Very much so in the world. I just did a presentation 2 days ago to a small group of students about what is the difference between studying and homework, because they actually don't know.
Right. It's really interesting because I feel like more and more we're seeing a lot of students coming in where they're reporting or their parents are reporting test-taking anxiety. So I always think kind of backwards that if they were studying appropriately and they were better prepared for the test, it could greatly reduce their test-taking anxiety. So then, in my mind, I'm thinking, okay, they need study skills. They need to learn how to study. Reading your notes over one time the night before is not studying.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So you're actually using research-based strategies and techniques for teaching study skills.
Yes, for sure.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, so there's 3, 4, 5 of them that we use pretty consistently. I can share the basics of one of those, and this is probably the most well-researched one, but it's a spaced practice, right? Where, and this is really hard for someone with ADHD, for instance, because spaced practice requires time.
Mm.
And someone with ADHD time is not really their friend.
No, we're time blind.
Perceiving it is really hard.
Yeah.
Tracking it is really hard. Doing something with lots of time until that big test happens, mm-hmm. like prepping for it with lots of time in between is like not really going to cause a whole lot of motivational things to fire in their brain.
Right.
So this is a tough one, I will say, for that. But the selling point is you're not studying any longer. Someone with ADHD will cram for 6 hours. Mm-hmm. They will get it all done right before that test and do okay, but they won't remember anything tomorrow.
Right.
So I'm saying space practices, can you space out the practice with which you are doing? Mm. And this isn't really a study skill. It's just a time skill around studying, mm-hmm. if that makes sense.
Sure.
You know,
planning and time management skill, it sounds like.
Right. But the basis for the brain behind it really is that you actually want your mind to forget a little bit. Hmm. Because the act of the recall is the thing that is actually creating a stronger connection in your brain.
Oh.
Because what do you do on a test? You recall.
Recall, right.
And so if you haven't practiced recalling, then that's not going to go so well. Right. If your first practice at recalling information with a blank thing in front of you, you're not looking at your notes, looking at it and saying, oh, yeah, that's right. I knew that. That's not recall. Right. That's just rereading your notes and gaining a sense of familiarity. But now look at your notes and then completely cover them up and try and remember those 3 points that professor said about the Revolutionary War or whatever without looking. That's recall. Mm-hmm. And you do that spaced out over time leading up to something, and you're going to be set. And you have a little bit of the stress of not knowing and then knowing.
Right.
Right? So your brain has gotten used to that not knowing, knowing thing happening.
Sure.
And the little space and time where you have this little bit of pain and agony of like, I don't know, I don't know, I don't know. And how am I going to know? You just... the wheels are literally kind of cranking in there. Huh. So
that's fascinating.
Anyway.
That makes a lot of sense too. And, you know, I do hear a lot of students say, you know, I studied, I knew it all. And when I got into the test, I looked at the test and I was like a blank, it was a blank slate. I couldn't remember anything I knew the day before. So if they knew how to recall it, then they, one, wouldn't be stressed about looking at the page and it seeming foreign, but then they would have strategies to be able to recall. And they would, their brain would be used to recalling, right? Is that what you're saying?
Right.
Mm-hmm. That's brilliant. That's awesome. Yeah. So study skills.
And the thing that's counterintuitive to that, it's required that your brain forgets.
So that's forgetting weird, is actually a good thing.
The forgetting is a part of the learning.
Mm-hmm.
You just don't want to forget it entirely, right? So, but you want those edges to get fuzzy and then have your brain try and pull it back online, right? And then that'll get easier. You will feel that it gets smoother. You know, when you do flashcards and you're like, I have no idea at all. And then by the time you're really getting there, you've got a faster flashcard deck.
Right.
So
that's brilliant.
So the other one, like one of the... you know, our main sources for study skills and research based in light of math itself, math and science, is a book called Mind for Numbers by, I'm going to make sure I have it, by Barbara Oakley. And she has some fantastic, fantastic advice on study skills, how to. She's in the back of the book. There's a list of 10. You know, this is what you should do to study. And this is, and then another list of like, this is what you should not
do.
Right? And there's 10 of them, you know? So anyhow, she's an entertaining read and some really great resources as far as how to succeed.
That's good to know. I like, and we'll put links to these books in our show notes. And also, you know, thinking about, I myself have ADHD and we evaluate tons and tons of individuals and diagnose ADHD. And it's very, very common if we're looking at their academic skills, if they have a weakness in anything, it's typically math. So do you have any insight into why ADHD brains struggle more with math than neurotypical brains? or no?
Yeah, I mean, outside of just kind of guessing, I have not, this doesn't mean it doesn't exist, right. But I have not seen, you know, for instance, with ADHD, I've definitely seen the numbers around depression and anxiety being associated with it to the levels of like 60%.
Oh, for sure. The comorbidity. Yeah.
So that kind of association I've seen. Now, that kind of direct correlation between, you know, ADHD and dyscalculia, and I have not seen numbers around it. It does not surprise me. Mm-hmm. Math takes repeating somewhat menial tasks over and over and over again. Well, that to some people, many people, is really boring, mm-hmm. right? So math outside of a context where it matters that you're solving a problem in this world can be, unless you just love numbers, right. like it can be really boring, mm-hmm. right?
Definitely. And ADHD brains are very interest driven. So if, right. They can do better, remember better, focus better when things are interesting or meaningful to them. So that's why what I was kind of thinking about too, when you did that example of that multiplication fact story, where you told a story about someone, not only did you give them pictures to visualize in their mind, that story makes it more meaningful. And then maybe they can then in turn make it more meaningful to their life and feel like it is more, you know, meaningful. And therefore, now I'm not as bored and reluctant to engage in math.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's
sure.
also, and it's very comprehensive too, right? Mm-hmm. Skills.
Really. Yeah. Say more about that. What do you mean?
So I don't even know if comprehensive is the right word, but each skill in math seems to build on the skill from the day before.
Oh, right. Absolutely.
It's like an upward cycle.
Potential. Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're not super attentive and focused in class yesterday during direct instruction, then you're going to probably struggle the next day with the next skill.
And then the next and the next
exactly.
and then it's a very fast snowball.
It's a vicious cycle.
Over. So that alone, like just the logistics of attention span and the fact that math is so sequential and every day is the new foundation for the next day.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So you got to be fully attentive and engaged every day in math.
Right.
It's hard.
Yes.
So
it is really hard.
So if people are interested in STEM tutoring or reaching out to you or securing your services, how do they find you? What's the best way for them to find you?
Yeah. So for STEM tutoring, we have a website and we actually, you know, the websites have the contact us or need to, you know, click here for more information. So we have a contact us button on there and we promise that we get back to you within 24 hours, business day hours, right? Mm-hmm. So it doesn't just come into this queue. We are really good at getting back to you there. So the website for that is tutoringstem.com. STEM tutoring was already taken. It's so funny. So anyway, we did a long time ago. I was like, no, it's already taken. So it's tutoringstem.com. All over the place, there's the contact us buttons. There's a page specifically around neurodivergence that you can take a look at. And then as far as academic coaching in the college setting, that's a subset of that. You won't find much there on that. And that's thresholdcoaches.com. So that's where you can find that.
Okay. And then one more quick question I forgot to ask. How long do students typically need your services or use your services? And I know it probably varies from individual to individual, but on average, mm-hmm. about how long?
Right. So I think in the tutoring world, right, I mean, they typically stick with this for the year. And, you know, they like their tutor. That's part of it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they don't dread going.
That's great.
It's actually, like, somewhat enjoyable. So that's good, right? And So ideally, our work is always to create independence, like to foster independence in these kids. So we're not trying to keep them for a year. We're trying to give them skill sets to where they can get out from the perception that they have to have us to succeed.
Right.
Because we won't be here forever, by definition. Like, that human is not going to be there for, you know, the next 8 years of their schooling. And so, anyhow, that's a big goal of ours, is not only just teaching him how to do number seven, but teaching him some of those skills to think about this on your own, right?
Yeah.
The whole notion of I do, we do, you do. We don't leave the you do out.
Oh, good. Right?
That's a really important part of it. And we face a little bit of a reluctance often with the you do part, but that doesn't stop us, right? So that's where the warmth and the encouragement and the connection is really pivotal. So to answer your question, I'd say they stick with us, you know, from whatever point they enter in, they usually stick with us throughout the school year. And then, you know, it depends on what math is next. I mean, I don't know, you know,
right.
It's a good teacher and they love them and there's easy access to help. Or if they, some students stay with us all the way through their math career.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah.
And when you've got severe dyscalculia on board, it and the necessary creativity and outside of the box thinking required sometimes to make those numbers work in your mind. You know, most teachers do not know what dyscalculia is.
I would agree. Yeah.
And so that's really difficult because it's a relatively new diagnosis, or at least relatively, you know, known.
Right.
I will say. And so that makes it tricky in a school setting. And they honestly, I was a teacher. I'm married to a teacher. I respect their work incredibly. And they do not have the time to do that level of personalized instruction. It's just impossible.
I agree.
So that's that. And then coaching is, for the college students, is all over the board. Sometimes they just need the strategies and they can run with it on their own. Sometimes their development, right, can be 3 years behind with ADHD, and that means they're 15 coming into the setting. So they might need us the whole darn time. So that one really varies.
Okay. Good to know. That's great to know that not only do you equip them to be independent, to feel confident in I can do math on my own, but for the ones that feel like they need you, you'll be there for them for as long as they need, if need be. So thank you so much, Cindy. I'm so happy to learn about tutoring STEM. And I think it is a great area of need for students, for all students, but especially neurodivergent students struggling a lot with math and science. So I'm so happy to learn about your services and your tutoring, and your coaching is amazing. So we'll put links to your website in our show notes and links to those books you mentioned. And again, thank you for your time and thank you for being here. And I really think a lot of listeners are going to take value out of what you have to offer.
Yeah. Awesome. Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Nice. You're so welcome.
Yeah.
Awesome. And thank you, listeners, for being here today. As always, if you have questions or further topics you would like us to explore in the podcast, you can email us at letstalklearningdisabilities@gmail.com. You can also reach our podcast website at www.ltldpodcast.com. You can see all episodes in chronological order that we've recorded, or you can choose you can choose by category. So, you know, learning disabilities or ADHD or processing issues, every episode that talks about those areas will be included in that category. So thank you guys again for being here. And we look forward to another great episode coming soon. Our 100th episode, which will be incredible. We're going to have to do something really special and throw a party. So anyways, have a great day, everyone. And we'll see you next time.
Thank you so much for joining us today. In our show notes, you can find information about today's talk, as well as links to resources and other episodes. If you have questions about today's talk, have ideas for future episodes, or just want to stay connected, you can contact us through Diagnostic Learning Services on Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, and Instagram. So, let's keep talking learning disabilities. This podcast is sponsored by eDiagnostic Learning. You can find more information at www.ediagnosticlearning.com.